welcome to Kicker News. I'm Henrike Wilhelm, and you're listening to my podcast.
After slavery, there was this ideological underpinning, you know, that marked every aspect of life for Black people. And that's why we have the Black Lives Matter movement, because the present is still so marked by the past.
February is Black History Month, and so I invited three special guests to talk to me about the importance of this month. Later on in the show, I will speak to the co-founders of Black Lives Matter here in the province. But first, I invited Dr. Afua Cooper from Dalhousie University in Halifax. Afua Cooper is a professor for Black Studies, and she spoke to me about the history of Black people here in Newfoundland and Labrador. Have a listen.
I feel like whenever we talk about Black History Month, the focus is very much on the United States and on the state's history. Why is it important to celebrate Black History Month in Canada and in the Atlantic provinces?
Because Black people lived and continue to live in Canada and the Atlantic provinces, always looking to the United States or commenting on the Black experience in the United States serves as a way of erasing the Black history and the Black presence in Canada. Is as if there's no Black presence and no Black history. There has been a Black presence in Canada that's documented by record that goes back to 1604, 1606. So it's quite a long history. And we have identifiable communities of Black people in Canada since the 17th century. Certainly in Newfoundland and Labrador, as we know now, there was a Black presence.
Maybe you could elaborate a little bit on that. What is the Black history in the Atlantic provinces and in Newfoundland and Labrador?
When you get to Newfoundland and Labrador, a lot of work is not done on the Black presence there. In fact, many people are still a little bit sort of surprised when you say, well, there was a Black presence in Newfoundland and Labrador from earlier on, from the 17th, 18th, 19th century. When we're looking for the Black presence in Newfoundland and Labrador, we turn to the sea. In the same way when we look for, you know, the white history. And it's important because some of the earliest presence of Black people in Newfoundland and Labrador had to do with the maritime experience, meaning people who worked in fisheries, people who worked in the whaling industries. There's a document that I found in one of the colonial history texts of Newfoundland, in which there were mention of slave fishermen who were brought up by their owners from Bermuda to Newfoundland. They fished in the Grand Banks, and then they would come on shore in St. John's to dry the fish. And they were very successful. They weren't fishing for themselves. They were enslaved fishermen. But it's really a tantalizing piece of evidence. There were many enslaved people who worked in maritime occupations. So that's one example. A second example, also maritime example, is that Newfoundland was intimately linked to the slave economies of the West Indies. So when we look for the history of Blacks in Newfoundland and Labrador, we place this history in the larger history of the Atlantic world and slavery and European colonization. And then if we may focus our attention on the what's called the West India trade. And it's this branch of commerce between all the Atlantic provinces and the West Indies. And so what did this trade entail? Well, it entailed the exchange of goods between the Atlantic provinces and the Caribbean or the West Indies. And what are these goods? The goods that came from Newfoundland and Labrador were dried fish, herring, mackerel, salted cod, salted pork, flour, timber from Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. And these were sailed down to the West Indies and exchanged for sugar, coffee, cocoa, rum, molasses. I'm sure you know about Newfoundland screech rum. To become a bona fide Newfoundlander, you kiss the fish and you drink screech. And where's that rum coming from? Rum is coming from Jamaica and other places in the West Indies. It's an interesting connection. What I want to say is that the dried fish was a main protein source for enslaved people in the West Indies and in South America. That's what fed the slaves. The timber built houses for the planters. Timber was used in the construction of houses and also used in the construction of barrels and pails and so on. The barrels and the casks were the containers in which the rum and the sugar and the molasses were stored and sent up north to the Atlantic provinces. And likewise, the dried fish and the salted beef and pork were also placed in these barrels and casks and sent down to the West Indies. This happened for several centuries, and it was through this trade that the Atlantic provinces inserted themselves into the global economy. And oftentimes, when the sugar and the molasses and so on are on board the ship and being sent up north, there were also enslaved people on those ships. Another way in which we connect the Black history to the history of the Atlantic provinces is through the building of slave ships. And there are several ships that were built in Newfoundland for the slave trade. So when I talked about earlier the West India trade that the Atlantic provinces were engaged in, we can think of the West India trade as sort of a sub-trade of the triangular trade. Mm-hmm. Because the ships would go from the Atlantic provinces down the coast and engage in that commercial activity. Mm-hmm. So a ship leaving St. John's, Newfoundland, didn't come from Africa. It didn't cross the Atlantic Ocean from Africa. They had their own specific, unique coastal trade. Then we also turn to archaeology. There was discovered the skeleton of a man in a cemetery in Labrador. He had been sleeping there for about 200 years. And when the archaeologist, Peter Tuck from Memorial University, went down, was determined that he was a man of African heritage. He could have been British, Canadian, American, who knows. He was about 28 years old and there was buried. For me, it's a good metaphor for the history of Black people in Newfoundland and Labrador. Mm-hmm. That it's buried, it's kind of erased. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, maybe there's a huge rainfall or a snowstorm or something, and then this grave sort of rises up and the contents are declared. Mother Nature said, it's time. And so we have this man, he's called WH, because on the soles of his shoes were inscribed these two letters, WH. His Memorial University, his bones are there. Oh. And his uniform is at the rooms in St. John's. So those are some of the events, or what we would call notes on the history.
If you shift your focus from the history of Black people in Newfoundland and Labrador to the future, what still remains to be done?
Well, we look at the history and then we look at the present. And one could also say the history is in the present, because the present is so informed by the past. Mm-hmm. But we always have to look to the future. One of the things that happened because of slavery was that slavery ended whenever it ended legally in the British Empire, 1834, if we just want to use that as an example. But it didn't mean the end of racism, the end of racial discrimination. It didn't mean that full equality came for Black people. Mm-hmm. It was a century of struggle after that. When slavery ended, if you look at what in the British world, what the British did, they compensated the slave owners.
The enslaved people didn't get anything after slaving for 3 centuries. They didn't even give them a penny. Property was sacrosanct. So you are going to compensate the property owners. And of course, slavery meant that enslaved people were property. They were a commodity. They were owned by other people. So there's the material aspect of it. But then there's also the ideological aspect, because racism is also driven by ideology. An ideology that says, well, white people are superior, black people are inferior, they're not fully human, we can treat them any old way, we can kill them, we can shoot them, we can discriminate against them, we don't have to educate them, we'll build schools, but they won't be able to attend the schools, they can build their segregated schools or whatever. After slavery, there was this ideological underpinning, you know, that marked every aspect of life for Black people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we have the Black Lives Matter movement, because the present is still so marked by the past. Mm-hmm. It's marked in a way that's detrimental for Black people. It's marked in a way in which in the present we still see severe violence committed upon the bodies of Black people. It's just incredible. So as we look to the future and as we still negotiate our way in the present, all of us, we have to tell the truth of slavery, the truth of racial discrimination, and we have to get reparations for what happened to Black people within the North American world over the course, and in fact, the world of the entire Americas over the course of 4 or 5 centuries.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Precious Famelusi and Brian Amadi are co-founders of Black Lives Matter NL. I spoke to them about what the movement achieved and what remains to be done. In your opinion, why is it so important to celebrate Black History Month in Newfoundland and Labrador?
There's been an increase in immigration in Newfoundland from, like, when I think of back when I first came to Newfoundland and Labrador, there was no, when we thought about Black History Month, there was nothing evident to show that it was Black History Month. But, and then also to when we think of the history of Black Canadians in Newfoundland as well, or Black Canadians in general. So it was important to show that, to use Black History Month as a way to educate, a way to celebrate, and a way to bring the community together.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the history we see that you learn about in school, or that's just prevalent, is very stereotypically white history,
mm-hmm.
right? So I've come across a couple Black Canadians in Newfoundland that have no idea about any Black history. They don't know anything about the Black heroes in, like, North America or the Black heroes in Canada.
Yeah.
The knowledge about Black people that have done something is just not there, because that's not what is taught in school at all.
Mm-hmm.
So using the Black History Month to bring, not that it shouldn't be learned on every other month, but just emphasizing it on February, emphasizing that, you know, Black people existed, right? We didn't just start existing a couple years ago. We've always been here, and we've always been doing stuff. It's a huge part towards equality, knowing that your ancestors contributed to, you know, the society. You're part of the history that existed, and in a sense, you can also add to the current life that you're living in right now.
So you guys both mentioned education and school. And when we look at Black History Month, how can we achieve education on the history of Black people in the Atlantic provinces beyond this month?
If we talk about education of Black Canadians in Newfoundland, are we thinking of education in terms of high school curriculum education? Or, because there's, when we, like, if you look at the high school curriculum, there's no really visual representation of Black Canadians or the history of Black Canadians, except for, I think, the most we come close is Nova Scotia, where we hear about the story of, she was a businesswoman in Nova Scotia,
Viola Desmond. So Viola Desmond's story, I think, is one of the only stories we hear when high school kids learn about Canadian history. But there's more stories about Viola Desmond. So it is something that we feel should be done. And if we look at a high school curriculum review, and it's something I believe that should be really implemented to, and I know there are researchers that have done the work of talking about Black people, Black Canadian Black people, and even researchers that have done the work of how Black people migrated to Canada through different means could be from the British colony, from the slave trade in America, people that fought for the British Army that came over to Canada. And then there were also Black people before, the Nova Scotian Black people as well. So I feel as if there's way more work to be done from that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
We have to also look at the importance of history, right? Because
yeah.
History, building upon history, is how society exists, right? So not every new generation that comes doesn't change everything in the past, so we just build upon things. And when we look at the stories of the people from the past, what they've done, that inspires us to act.
Mm-hmm.
So in a situation where there's invisibility, where there's no representation of Black history in both the curriculum, in like common talk, then there's no avenue to achieve that like historic pride.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a member of a family, for example, you look at, you say, we don't do this, there's this phrase a lot of people use, they're like, in my family we do this, in my family, we don't do this. This is our tradition. When there's no Black history, you can't say things like that. You can't say this is my tradition, or this is what we've done, or this is how we've contributed to Canada, because you just don't know. So you just feel uncertainty about your existence in Canada.
Yeah.
Because you're not just aware of what people have contributed. So it's very important in that sense to add it to the curriculum. Black history. History of, you know, of all POC people in general should be added to the curriculum, and it should be just, you know, represented.
Yeah.
History itself is really whitewashed.
Yeah.
And there is no representation present in history, and just even in modern day history, it's really whitewashed. It's really talking about the great Christopher Columbus, and we need to develop more of going towards where we can have more representation in history being spoken about.
When we look at Black Lives Matter in Newfoundland and Labrador, and when you look back to the beginnings of the movement to now, what would you say were you able to achieve?
Discourse, I think, is one of, because before the rally, before we started anything at all, people's conception of what racism was just very, you know, ignorant, and a lot of people just believe because they don't see it, it doesn't exist, or
mm-hmm.
because no one tells them that they're doing it, it doesn't exist. Because there's no talk about it, it doesn't exist. So through the BLM movement, we'll be able to create that discourse. And a lot of people have actually learned how to be allies in reality and not just imagining. Because it's like playing a sport. It's one thing to think you might be great at playing the sport, and it's another thing to be in the sport and actually be great at it. So a lot of people have given that opportunity for people who would normally not have that conversation, to have that conversation. As an organization, we're really just here to educate us about the life of the Black people in the community. And that's important, because if any part of society doesn't function properly, it affects all parts of society. So with BLM, we've been able to create this discourse about racism and about what it actually means in reality, and the fact that it's not just about, you know, saying the N-word. It's actually deeper than that. It's systemic, and it's something that we should be aware of about all the time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, I think we're able to start building a way to have the community come together, a way to have a place for where people can actually have these conversations. And like Brian said, we've been able to really change the meaning of what racism means, because racism has a different type of face we see in America and Canada, and definitely has a different type of face in Newfoundland here too, but it's still racism as well.
You mentioned discourse is a big thing. What would you say still remains to be done?
Hopefully one day we'll see a Black person as a politician. Maybe we'll get the first RCMP Black officer. Just more representation in society, in like functional society, I think is a huge thing. Secondly, maybe the curriculum too, like we mentioned. changing the curriculum to be more representative of people who are actually in school here. Because Newfoundland has a growing population of immigrants, and it's not easy to just ignore it as it was before, right? Like, I think 10 years ago, you might come across very a limited number of Black people, as you will currently in Newfoundland. And as people continue to come in, especially like international students, it's important to be welcoming to them, because they're not coming here to, I don't know, to be disruptive to the society. They're actually adding valuable brain power to the society, and also financial power to society. So if they come here with all this benefits to Newfoundland, then it doesn't make sense that they'll be discriminated against, or they'll be put in a society that doesn't actually enable them contribute more to it, or that doesn't enable them achieve self-fulfillment.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more to be done in society in Newfoundland to I don't know, accommodate for not just Black people, but a lot of other people of difference, right?
Yeah. It seems like the media attention regarding Black Lives Matter has calmed down a bit. So what do you guys have planned to carry the strength of the movement into the future?
For me, personally, I don't think popularity is what we're going for. Yes, it would be good to get news coverage, but what we actually are seeking for is actual ways to help the Black community. We've actually been doing a lot of work just setting up the organization. We got in contact with the BLM Canada, and we're actually, you know, a part of BLM Canada now. Just things like that, just trying to move the organization. It's just a way that we're making essential contributions to the life of the actual Black people, regardless of like news coverage or not.
In terms of our programming, we do have plans for Black History Month to roll out more programs, but with the whole new COVID regulations, we're very unsure about those. But we're definitely going to be doing more programming that would contain educational sessions, that would contain promoting Black businesses, starting the conversation of how to talk about racism with your kids, how to talk about racism in school.
At the end of today's podcast, I encourage you to educate yourselves and seek conversations about the past, present, and future of Black people and all people of color here in the province. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Henrike Wilhelm, and you've been listening to my podcast for Kicker News.